As we prepare for the Yom Tov of Shavuos, Haba Aleinu Letova, I wanted to give a brief introduction to one of the mitzvos that is very much connected to Shavuos, and that is the mitzvah of Bikurim. As we know from the Mishnah in the first parak of Bikurim, that the time, the season for bringing the Bikurim begins on Shavuos, and I thought it would be worthwhile to introduce some of the topics that we find throughout Maseches Bikurim. We know the Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim, Reishis Bikurei Admascha Tavi Beis Hashem Elokecha, that the first of your fruits, the fruit of your land, should be brought to the Beis Hashem, should be brought to the Beis Hamikdash. And of course, that is the topic of Maseches Bikurim. What type of land, what type of fruits, how does one bring the Bikurim, who exactly is obligated, what is the status of the Kedushas HaBikurim, and in what way do we enhance the mitzvah. So again, just to go through some of these ideas, very bekitzer as an overview. The Sefer HaChinuch writes in Mitzvah Tzadi Aleph that the very reason that we're commanded in the Mitzvah Bikurim is for the somewhat obvious reason of acknowledging the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is responsible for all of our success, that all of the goodness that we have in our lives and in this world, anything that we've ever been successful growing in our field, to acknowledge the fact that it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, with regard to what type of produce is obligated in Bikurim, and what land is obligated in Bikurim, a lot of the first parak of Maseches Bikurim deals with that question. The mitzvah of Bikurim, we know from Maseches Kelim in the first parak, only applies in Eretz Yisrael. And furthermore, we know that it only applies to the Shivas Haminim. There is an interesting Rashi in Sefer Nehemiah in the 10th parak, where Rashi suggests that perhaps Midrabanan, other species other than the Zion Minim, are obligated in the mitzvah of Bikurim. But that is seems to be against the Mishnah, seems to be against the Gemara, the Talmud Yerushalmi, and we don't really have a source for that. So it's limited to the seven mitzvos, the seven species of Eretz Yisrael: wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olives, and dates. Furthermore, the Mishnayos tell us that it has to be a fruit of a superior quality. So the Mishnayos distinguish between, let's say, dates that were grown in the mountains versus dates that were grown in a valley. And it speaks to the quality of the fruit, and only the higher quality fruits are obligated in Bikurim. With regard to the land, the Pasuk said, Reishis Bikurei Admascha. So therefore, it's incumbent upon those who own the land, and the entire land, to bring the Bikurim. It's not enough to just own the fruit. And therefore, if a person rented land, or a person was a tenant farmer, he would not be obligated in Bikurim, because while the fruit belonged to him, the land does not belong to him. When it comes to the bringing of the Bikurim, I guess one could say that there are three stages. There's the Hafrasha, there's the separation, the designating of the fruit as Bikurim. There's the Havas Bikurim, the bringing of the Bikurim. And then there's a Kriya, a recitation of Psukim, that accompanies the bringing of the Bikurim. Let's go step by step. Hafrasha, with regard to designating the fruit, so the Mishnayos in the third parak of Bikurim tell us that a person goes down to his field, and he sees that a fig is ripening, or he sees that a cluster of grapes is ripening, or he sees a pomegranate is ripening, and he takes a small reed and he ties it around those first fruits, and he declares, these are the Bikurim fruits, right? Elu Bikurim. He designates them as Bikurim. Ideally, the first fruits are supposed to be the first fruits, and they're supposed to also be designated while they're still in that first stage of ripening, not after they're harvested. Bidi Eved, the Rambam writes, that if they were harvested, one could actually designate Bikurim after they've already been removed from the tree or from the ground. And similarly, while one's supposed to designate the first fruits, if a person, for whatever reason, designated later ripening fruits, that would still be valid as Bikurim. How much does one need to separate for Bikurim? So Midaraisa, there's no clear indication. Any amount seems to be significant. A single fruit, in theory, could exempt one's entire crop. Midrabanan, the Yerushalmi tells us, and the Rambam Paskins this way, And we're familiar with this law that Midrabanan, when it comes to Bikurim, one has to separate 1/60th of the crop as Bikurim. Additionally, the Mishnah is talking in the third parak that if one wants to designate additional Bikurim later on, he's allowed to do so. And we call that Tosef as Bikurim. And it has many of the dinim that are very, very similar to the Bikurim itself. What happens if a person didn't separate Bikurim? Does that prohibit the other fruit? The remainder of his field. So the halacha is clear that that's not the case, that Bikurim does not make the rest of the crop usur for consumption. This would be a difference, as the Mishnayos in the second parak outline the differences between Bikurim and Truma and Meiser. This would be a very clear difference between them, that Bikurim Failure to separate Bikurim would not prohibit the remainder of the crop. While with regard to Truma and Maaser, if one did not separate Trumas and Maaseros, then the crop would be Tevel, would be considered Tevel, and it would be Usur for consumption. Additionally, Bikurim are supposed to be the first of the gifts that are separated from the field by the farmer. Afterwards, he separates Truma, and then Maaser Rishon, and then Maaser Sheni, or Maaser Ani on the year. Again, if he did it out of order, it would still be the Eved work. The designation would work with the Eved, but he would, according to the Medrash, the Mechilta writes, the Medrash Halacha on Shemos, says that he would be in violation of a losase for separating the various portions, the gifts of the field, out of the proper order. So what exactly do we do with the Bikurim? So the owner of the Bikurim has an obligation, like we said in the Pasuk, to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. And when he gets there, he presents it to the Kohen. If he lost his Bikurim, the Mishnayos describe if he loses his Bikurim, his Bikurim will become damaged along the way. If that happens before they get to the Har HaBayis, according to some, to the Azara, so then he has to replace his Bikurim with others. It's still under his responsibility at that point. When he gets to the Beis HaMikdash, so he, like we said, he hands it over to the Kohanim, and he begins the process of the declaration, the Kriyas HaBikurim. He recites the Psukim in Devarim Perach Avav, which give a review. We know it from the Haggadah Shel Pesach, a review of Jewish history, that he thanks, he acknowledges the fact that Hashem gave us Eretz Yisrael, a land that is flowing with Zavas Chalav Devash, flowing with milk and honey. And then he says, here are the first fruits in an expression of that Hakar Satov. And he goes on to, again, to describe a synopsis of Jewish history, Arami Oveiravi, the Yered Mitzrayim, and now, Baruch Hashem, here we are in Eretz Yisrael, bringing the first fruits which you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have helped us to grow. Now, it's interesting to note that these two mitzvos are, in fact, two mitzvos. There's a mitzvah of Hava'as Bikurim and a mitzvah of Kriyas HaBikurim. The Rambam counts them in the Sefer HaMitzvos as two separate positive commandments, mitzvos Asei, Kuf Chaf Hei, and Kuf Lamed Beis, respectively. And we have situations described in the first parak of Bikurim, where a person would be eligible, let's say, to bring the Bikurim, but not able to do the Kriyas HaBikurim. So, for example, if one sends the Bikurim with a Shliach, so the Shliach is not able to say, he's not able to say, thank you, Hashem, for the land that you have given me, because he's not bringing Bikurim that grew in his land. He's bringing it on behalf of someone else. So, again, this is the mitzvah of Kriyas HaBikurim, which is separate from the mitzvah of bringing the Bikurim. As I mentioned at the beginning, the time for bringing the Bikurim begins at Shavuos, that's the Mishnah in the first parak. Between Shavuos and Sukkos, that is the primary season for bringing Bikurim, and if you bring your Bikurim then, you bring them and you can recite the declaration. From Sukkos to Chanukah, a person is able to bring the Bikurim, but he's no longer able to recite, again, those Psukim from Devarim Chavav. And from Chanukah and on, it's no longer the season for bringing the Bikurim. With regard to the bringing, the Mishnayos make it very clear that while obviously a person can bring the Bikurim on his own, that's not the ideal way to bring it, but rather you should bring it along with many others, Barov Am Hadras Melech, and in the third parak of Maseches Bikurim describes the great fanfare with which they would perform this march to Yerushalayim. Just to further clarify that process of bringing the Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash, if you look in the Rambam, in the third parak of Hilchos Bikurim, so he describes how they come up to the Beis HaMikdash, and when you arrive at the Har HaBayis, he takes the basket, which he's been carrying, he places it on his shoulders, and he enters into the Azara. And at that point, the Levim begin to sing our Mimcha Hashem Ki Tilisani, thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for lifting us up. And then with the basket still that we mentioned, Hayom LaHashem Elokecha, I'd like to make a declaration before you, Hashem. Then he takes the basket off of his shoulders. This is all from the Rambam, paraphrasing from the Rambam. He lowers the basket and holds it by its rim, and the Kohen places his hand under it and waves it in all four directions. That's part of the Pasuk. That's what it says in the Pasuk. It's a Dinda Araisa of Tenufa. And then the owner recites the rest of the Psukim, again, Arami Oved Avi. He recites that whole passage, Dvarim Perek Chavav, up to Pasuk Yud. And at that point, he takes the Bikurim and he puts the basket down next to the Mizbeach on the southeast corner of the Mizbeach. He then bows, as one does when entering the Azara, and he leaves. After the ceremony, what do they do with the Bikurim? They take the Bikurim and they divide it up amongst the Kohanim who are serving at that time. This is one. Bikurim is considered one of the 24 gifts that are given to the Kohanim. Additionally, in addition to bringing his basket of fruit, he also brings, as we see in the Mishnah, is a karbanos along with the Bikurim. It's not really a part of the Bikurim ceremony, but he brings a karban shlamim on behalf of the members who are traveling together. It says in the Mishnah, the third parak, that an ox would walk in front of the people bringing the Bikurim, and that ox, according to the Rashba and a Tshuva, is offered as a shlama on behalf of the entire tzibur of Bikurim bringers at that time. And of course, like any person who performs a karban, this would be true whether he brought a karban or not, he has to spend the night in Yerushalayim, as there's a din of lina to acknowledge the fact that we don't just drop off our karbanos, we don't just drop off our bikurim and then run away, but rather we spend the night in Yerushalayim, only departing the next day. The Gemara in Makos on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph explains a pasuk in Devarim Perek Yud Beis that refers to trumas yadecha, the truma of your hands. Again, the Gemara over there in Makos Yud Zayin explains that trumas yadecha is a reference to bikurim. Interesting that bikurim is called truma. But there are many connections that we see, and again, the second parak of Maseches Bikurim focuses on this, the connections that exist between the world of Truma and the world of Bikurim. So while we mentioned before that unlike Truma, which if not separated causes the rest of one's produce to be Tevel, we said by Bikurim that would not be the case. If you didn't separate Bikurim, the other fruit would be permitted for consumption. But with regard to eating the Bikurim, it is like Truma. That is to say that if a non-Kohen eats Bikurim, or a Kohen who is Tame eats Bikurim, he's Chayav Misa Bidei Shemayim, like a person who eats Truma. What happens if a person inadvertently eats Bikurim? So the halach would be, in such a case, that he has to pay for what he ate. He adds an additional fifth, and again, that's similar to what one would do if one accidentally ate Truma. Just to be clear, the Bikurim only become sanctified with the sanctity of Truma, Once they reach Yerushalayim. Nonetheless, from the moment that they're designated, it would be usur to eat the bikurim, because by doing so, you'd violate the positive commandment, the mitzvah saseh, of havas bikurim. So again, while the full binding sanctity of the bikurim is only once they reach Yerushalayim, the prohibition to eat them applies immediately from the time that they are designated. From the time that they enter Yerushalayim, Bikurim have three lo sase associated with them. One has to do with who can eat the Bikurim, one has to do with the time for eating Bikurim, and one has to do with the place for eating Bikurim. So again, we already mentioned that with regard to who can eat the Bikurim, a non-Kohen or a Tamei Kohen who eats the Bikurim would be Chayav Misa Bidei Shemayim. In terms of the time for eating the Bikurim, even if a Kohen were to eat it, but if he ate the Bikurim prematurely, that is to say, before the whole ceremony and placing the Bikurim next to the Mizbeach, he would be in violation of a lav, and he would be chay of Malkus. And in terms of the place of the Bikurim, from the time they enter Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to eat them outside the city. This is true even after one performs the avoda of the Bikurim, the waving of the Bikurim, and the kriyas haBikurim. It's bound to be eaten in Yerushalayim, and again, failure to do so, the Kohen would be subject to Malkus. I'll just conclude by saying that the final pasuk, or the pasuk that appears in the Chumash immediately after the psukim of Kriyas HaBikurim, again in Devarim Perech HaVav, says, "V'samachta b'chol ha'tov asher nasan l'cha Hashem l'okecha," that you should be in a state of simcha with all of the goodness that Hashem has given you. And the Bikurim is maybe one of the most beautiful, expressions of enjoying and appreciating and celebrating the goodness that Hashem has given us. Again, you read through the third parak of Maseches Bikurim, there's such a beautiful description of the trip up to Yerushalayim, people coming together, the ox that I mentioned earlier, with its horns gilded and a wreath of olive branches on its head, leading the procession, people playing music, workers and craftsmen in Yerushalayim coming out to greet the Meve Bikurim and to stand up in their honor. And we even have a quote from the Balei HaTosfos in the Hadar Tzakenim, which is a collection from the Balei HaTosfos, that anyone who never saw the celebration of the Bikurim has never seen rejoicing in this world. Mesillas Yesharim actually writes in Perek Yutes that the Bikurim process is such a beautiful model of what it means to perform mitzvahs b'heder mitzvah. So again, I share this with you just to give us a little bit of a window into that world of Bikurim. Like we said at the beginning, the laws of Bikurim only apply when we have a Beis HaMikdash, but as we know from many Ma'amari Chazal, when we learn about mitzvahs that we're not able to perform, in a certain sense, it's as if we've done them, and Amir Hashem, in the schus of our learning, we'll be better prepared for the Yom Tov of Shuas, again, which is the season of the bringing of the Bikurim, of celebrating this mitzvah, and Amir Hashem will be zocha to have a Beis HaMikdash, in which we'll once again have the opportunity to fulfill this mitzvah, the Poel Mamash.